views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up when you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date is December the 3rd, 2015. It is a Thursday afternoon as I broadcast from kind of chilly North Carolina today. Lots to talk about. Obviously, there was a mass shooting that occurred yesterday in San Bernardino, California. And of course, as the case, whenever we have these mass shootings, we hear Democrats and other folks start calling for gun control. And as I did my research today, I found out that, you know, a lot, and I already suspected this, but I found out that a lot of times, you know, these people, the Democrats, gun control for Democrats is a lot like the abortion issue for Republicans. The party leaders have no plan to do anything different than what's already being done. They don't plan to pass any legislation outlawing abortion. They don't plan on passing any legislation to outlaw guns or anything of that sort. What that is a hot button topic that is used to make people emotional and to garner votes for whichever party. Whether, you know, if you are pro-life and you don't believe in abortions, then of course the Republicans will use that. Not only the Republican Party, but other conservative operatives will try to use that to galvanize the voters in order to get as many Republicans in power as possible. Even though if you look back over the course of history, any time the Republicans have had control of all three branches of the United States government, and obviously we're talking about the federal government, they don't plan to do anything. You know, I haven't even heard of a state that is totally controlled, like North Carolina, totally controlled by Republicans, all three state legislative branches. You think they've introduced any kind of legislation? I mean, they will introduce legislation like defunding Planned Parenthood and things of that nature, but it usually falls right on its face. And then, you know, that's not going to impact people getting abortions. All right. If you defund them, the people that want to get abortions and the people that are that believe in, you know, a woman's right to have an abortion, they're going to find other ways to fund it and whatnot. And, you know, it's also unconstitutional to single out an organization that's focusing on one particular issue that may be a social issue or a political issue or social issue or whatnot. it's illegal for Congress to pass laws targeting one individual or targeting one organization, just like they did to defund Acorn. Remember that? That was totally unconstitutional. But again, these people don't care about what's constitutional. They don't care about the law. People in power, they break laws all the time. They expect you and I to be the only law-abiding so-called citizens in this republic. Same thing with gun control. When President Obama first entered office in 2008, the Democrats at that time also controlled the Senate and the House for at least 2 years, And they spent that time passing health care legislation. That's about the only thing they passed. But did they introduce any legislation to tighten up gun regulations and whatnot? No, they did not. So you can get emotional after these kind of shootings and whatnot. And you can fall for the politics of thinking that they're going to do something. If you elect them into office, they are not. They are not. And history shows this. And a lot of people, they just have, I guess, short-term memories. Or they are what you call political bystanders. They only become involved in politics and keep a track of issues and stuff during the election season every 2 years. Otherwise, you know, they really not trying to do anything. They really not trying to follow all the minutia that's going on in Congress, even though that minutia may have some important things going on in Congress. So that's what I want to mostly focus on today is gun control, these mass shootings, as well as terrorism. Let's talk about terrorism as well. Before I do get started, let me give out the telephone numbers for those that would like to chime in. The telephone number for the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. That's 549-032-POUND. Hit star 6 and 1 to signal me, or else I will just assume you're listening, as many people just call in to listen to the program because they're away from their computers or they don't have a smartphone. If you got a smartphone, you can listen to the program on a smartphone because the website will adapt to any device that you are accessing the website on. You can also use our web-based flash phone. There's a image that says call the show. Click on that. Little flash player will pop up. Just enter in or choose from the list of numbers that it's going to give you. Choose the right one. The numbers ending in 3660. Put in the participant code, and then you could choose us, put your name in or whatever, and then you can connect to the program that way. Just before I came on air, I shut down the chat. I know I had been announcing that we had a chat room, but I have noticed that we've been having some problems with the website over the past couple of days. And I am believing that it is attributed to that chat box we were using. I think it drains. It's using too many resources. It's using up a lot of resources on the server. And it's causing a drag on the pages loading up on Black Talk Radio Network. But not only Black Talk Radio Network, but the other websites that we maintain on our server. And so I had to get rid of that. Maybe it's not it, but I did not start experiencing these problems until I was testing out that chat box. So I had to eliminate that chat box, and I will monitor the different websites. Well, I should just really be able to monitor the server and see if that resolves the issue. So I apologize if you've been having any issues with the website being over capacity and therefore it won't allow you to access the website until, you know, some other visitors leave. And I think it's that chat box. I'm not sure, but I will find out in the next couple of days if that was the problem. I do want to, before I get into the program, I'm just going to pretty much do what Brother Dave does on his program, Tando Radio Show. I need to start doing this as well. Because there's a lot of news out there that people should be aware of, and you know, we can't talk about everything on this program, but we can point you to some of the news that we share on our Facebook pages as well as Twitter, social media. We share a lot of news. I'm maintaining, along with some help, a whole bunch of different Facebook pages and whatnot. The Black Talk Media Project is managing. On Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page, before I came on air, I posted a link to a news article coming out of Chicago, DNAinfo.com, video showing the police shooting or killing of Ronnie Johnson is to be released. If I recall correctly from reading that article, scanning over it, before I posted it, this young man was killed like 2 years ago in 2013. There was a lawsuit to have the video released. And unlike the killing of Laquan McDonald, where that judge said that, you know, the public does have a right to see this video since it was recorded on the public's cameras. Those cameras don't belong to the police. They belong to the public taxpayer. And so, but unlike in the Laquan McDonald case, different, I don't know if it's the same judge or a different judge, but they ruled against the lawsuit that was seeking to have that video released. And so I think Rahm Emanuel still trying to save his job, you know, because he's taking a lot of heat from his involvement or negligence, whichever way you want to put it, in the cover-up of the McDonald killing, Laquan McDonald killing by Chicago police. So that's an article that you want to check out. I definitely probably will talk about it either tomorrow as I get more information about that case. There are just so many victims. It's just so hard to keep up with them. I tell you, this was published on Black Talk Radio Network. There is going to be the 20th anniversary honoring freedom fighters. This is something that happens every year. I'm trying to pull that up right now, and I'll give you some more information. But it is in the blog section on blacktalkradionetwork.com. It's titled Malcolmites Announced 20th Anniversary of Annual Freedom Fighter. I think this is a dinner or Freedom Fighters tribute. This will be taking place on January the 17th. The Malcolm X Commemoration Committee will host this 20th anniversary of their endearing annual tribute to Black political prisoners and their families. This moving event will take place at the Martin Luther King Jr. Take place at Martin Luther King Jr. 1199 Labor Center, located at 310 West 43rd Street in Manhattan. So this is an event that's going to be in New York. If you would like to get more details, again, that is published for you in the blog section on Black Talk Radio Network. Let me check some of the other pages. This is very important. If you don't follow Black Talk Media Project, which is the North Carolina-based nonprofit that created Black Talk Radio Network, as well as the other websites and whatnot, managing the Facebook pages. Well, we also have a Facebook page called Black Talk Media Project. And I have always reported on news concerning threats to the Internet. The Internet is a very important tool for independent media, and it enables us to reach the masses. While it is kind of hard for us to reach as many people as, let's say, CNN.com or MSNBC.com, you know, the big corporate websites, because they have television programs and whatnot, and or really entire television networks. And so, yeah, they're going to be able to reach, you know, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people. But collectively, independent media producers are reaching just as many, if not more, because there have been some reports that came out about social media. More people prefer to get their news from social media. from people that they follow on social media, whether that's individuals, whether that is organizations, news publications, and whatnot. And, you know, there has always been a threat to limit the information that the masses have information to, because it, as many people are noting, that the masses today are more awake than, you know, masses of the past. And that is due to, you know, the internet and being able to access all types of information, you know, through your computer and smartphones and whatnot. So Congress, according to battleforthenet.com, Congress is trying to sneak language into a budget bill that would take away the FCC's ability to enforce the net neutrality rules that so many people worked hard to pass, undermining everything that was done to protect the open internet. And so they're asking that you participate in a call, a call to action by calling members of Congress, sending emails to members of Congress. The website is set up to make it easy for you to do so. It will also give you a script if you want to read from a script, because you're not, you know, as informed about the issue, but you know it's important. So yeah, please take advantage of that. That link is posted on our Facebook page, Black Talk Media Project. And by the way, you can access most of our Facebook pages right there on blacktalkradionetwork.com, as we have added the social media widgets to where you can actually view our social media posts without actually going to Facebook or going to Twitter or whatnot. So you can access that. Just look for the Black Talk Media Project widget on blacktalkradionetwork.com and click on that, because it is very important. It's very important, as I think I talked about last week, about, you know, attempts to corporations who control the internet hubs and whatnot, like, you know, a Time Warner Cable, AT&T, Verizon. You know, there are many different companies out there that provide internet access, and they're known as ISPs, which stands for Internet Service Provider. And so, you know, they're greedy. They're always trying to increase their profits and whatnot. And it wasn't that long ago where, you know, they were talking about creating a two-tiered internet, a fast lane and a slow lane. And those unable to afford the fees associated with the fast lane would be associated with the slow lane, which means that it may take, you know, 10, 15, who knows how long, for a website of, you know, like a blacktalkradionetwork.com to load up. And if we don't have the budget to pay them to be in the fast lane, you know, then, yeah, you won't be able to access our content. Because I don't know about you, but I don't have time to sit around 5-10 minutes waiting on a website to load up, you know. So that's very important. These people never quit. And they have these politicians in their back pockets and whatnot. And you know, it's not only a profit motive involved, but it's also so that the government can continue to control people's access, the masses' access to information. And they only want you to go through, you know, a CNN, a Fox News, a ABC, a CBS. You know, they don't want you to be able to get information from your favorite independent media sources. And so this is very important, people, because information, as has been said many times, information is power. All right. You know, you can empower yourself through information and having access to that information. All right. So let me see. Racism Daily is the latest social media page that we set up. Let me see. I think I have Racism Report on here. On Racism Report, there's, man, you know, I had to set up the Facebook page, Racism Report, because I was making a blog post where I was, like, you know, gathering all the stories related to the keywords, racism, white supremacy, things like that, racist. And so it was just so many stories, right, coming out that, you know, it was taking me too much time to just, you know, try to fit them all into one post and then post the links and all of that. So I was like, it'll be easier if I create a Facebook page. And then all I got to do is just post the link to the page and then send that out that way. So there are a number of stories. Microsoft shareholder meeting. They recently had a shareholder meeting Wednesday. That was yesterday. And it was largely and it's an annual shareholder meeting. And it's a platform for executives to repeat the company's mobile and cloud first mantra. But the question and answer session that followed delved into what they call thorny topics of racism as well as ageism, you know, discriminating against people in the workforce because of their age. There's also a report that says that white supremacy is a bigger threat to the United States than radical Islam. Let me see. Cleveland newspaper had to close the comment section on a Tamir Rice story because of a small army. This is how they described it. A small army of racists, just started bombarding the comment section with a whole bunch of racism and victim blaming towards that child. Let me see. There is Political Prisoner Radio. Let me see. Certain Days, Freedom for Political Prisoners, calendar 2016. I'm not sure. I don't recall exactly what that's about, but it's important or I wouldn't have posted it. But the U.S. Federal District Court Judge Robert Mariani has just ordered a full evidentiary hearing in federal court on the preliminary injunction that has been submitted in the Abu Jamal versus Karastets. I don't know how to pronounce that name. But anyway, that's pertaining to political prisoner Black Panther Mumia Abu Jamal, who has filed the lawsuit challenging the Pennsylvania Department of Correction policy of withholding medical treatment from prisoners. He contracted hepatitis C, which from some other research that I have done, that's almost like on an epidemic level in the prisons in the United States. Hepatitis C is a communicable disease, meaning that it can spread from person to person. And so he contracted that disease while he was in prison. And the thing is that there is new drugs that cure hepatitis C in up to, by, I think it says something like 90% of the people who use that drug get cured of hepatitis C. And they're denying Mr. Abu Jamal access to this treatment. And this lawsuit would have wider implications, possibly, I'm not sure, but possibly, I would imagine this is in federal court, that if he sets the precedence that the state of Pennsylvania Department of Correction cannot withhold medical treatment for various illnesses that prisoners are suffering from, if they can't do that, then I imagine this would set a precedence nationwide. And, you know, many of the people who are in prison, whether it is because they were made new slaves, under unjust laws in this country, or whether they actually belong there because they killed somebody or committed some other heinous crime, I still don't think that you can leave them untreated to spread disease among the entire population of prisoners. You know, that's just barbaric. And then you want to talk about this being a first world country? So, man, please get out of here with that. So that's a story that I think people should be keeping a close eye on. All right. And that's on our Political Prisoner Radio Facebook page. And there are some other stories as well that you can check out. Again, you can access most of our pages, Facebook pages, on Black Talk Radio Network. .com by just checking out the social media widgets. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into today's program and talk about some of these issues. Oh, I forgot to say, let me go ahead and open up Skype. That's the other way that you can call into the program, through our Skype line, which is 704 951-501-5030. That's an easier number for some people to remember. And they may want to call in, so I apologize. I forgot to open that. But I do want to go ahead and get started on some of these other stories. So in the wake of the latest mass shooting, let's talk about this mass shooting that occurred yesterday. From what I can tell from the mainstream corporate media, you know, I've been monitoring CNN mostly, but I've also been checking websites on the internet, and they really don't know anything other than, you know, a bunch of people got killed by two suspects that were killed by police. So that's about it. That's about all the information we have. The rest of it is just speculation. President Obama, I heard him talking about it, saying that, you know, he don't know whether to classify it as workplace violence or whether or not to classify it. Let me see what is going on here. No, I do not want to update Skype right now. All right, Skype is open for the studio line, 704-951-5030. He's saying that it could be an act of terrorism, or it could be an act of workplace violence. This person was shooter, the male shooter, was working for the county as some sort of health inspector or something like that, making 70 plus thousand a year, and he was attending some kind of workplace related event that was going on, serving the disabled at some center or whatnot. And it appears, again, these reports are sketchy, it appears that something happened there that could have set him off. Somebody, you know, pissed him off, said something to him and whatnot. We don't know for sure, but that's just some of the reports that's coming out, some of the speculation and whatnot. And then, of course, he is a Muslim. He has been described as a devout Muslim, but from his co-workers, people said he didn't really talk about his religion. He didn't try to like convert anybody on the job to Islam, and he wasn't going around handing out little Bible verses or Quran verses, you know, them little books on the job or nothing like that. So he doesn't, you know, when people say devout Muslim, I don't know why they say that. You know, I mean, what's a devout Muslim? What's a devout Christian? I don't know. Perhaps a person who observes all the religious rules and dictates and whatnot. So I guess that's what they're meaning. And but he was not someone who was, you know, that they would call radical or whatnot. And so, again, we don't know a whole lot of information about this. I've heard reports yesterday, we talked about it on New Abolitionist Radio briefly last night, that there was a report that there was a training exercise by the SWAT team in that area on the day of the shooting. But I saw a second source that said that the SWAT team training exercise was going on about a couple of days before that shooting took place. So again, you know, we don't have a whole lot of information. There's information coming from various sources reporting various things. And so there is nothing that I can point to tell you that, you know, this is correct, this is incorrect, because I simply don't know. I'm in the need to know, trying to find out, like many of you, what set this person off. Now, one of the things, though, that seems very, very odd to me, is that this person apparently went home, picked up his wife, who was being described as the second shooter. She was born in Pakistan. I forget where he was born, but I do know he had made a trip to Saudi Arabia and came back with his wife, is what one of his co-workers said, that a few years ago that he had traveled to Saudi Arabia and to marry a person he met on the internet, presumably, you know, his wife, that was being alleged to be the second shooter. Now, what's weird about that is because he apparently left this event, went and picked up his wife and child. They apparently had a small child, not sure the age of the child, but that they then dropped the child off at his mother's house and then went on this shooting rampage. And that just seems very, very strange to me. It seems very strange to me. And then, you know, other people are saying they had a bunch of guns in the house and said that they were wearing body armor and even had their own cameras, body cams and whatnot. And so this is just very, very strange, very strange. And I mean, just think about that. You have a good paying job. You're making 70 plus thousand a year with benefits. You know, you live in the American dream. The neighbors said that, you know, they weren't really allowed people, but they could be observed relaxing and chilling in the backyard. And, you know, he just recently got married, you know, when I say recently, within the past few years or so, had a small child, you know. So this is, you know, they live in the so-called, quote-unquote, American dream. And so it's just very strange to me that they would have had all of this equipment, had these guns and whatnot, and then him going to this event connected to his job and just being, you know, if it's true that somebody said something to him, probably some racist or a religious bigot probably said something to him and set him off, and he came back and just started killing up a bunch of people. It just seems strange to me, people. It just seems all very odd, and I don't know what to believe. I really don't. One of the things that occurred to me, and I'm not saying that I have any evidence whatsoever to support a theory, but if everybody else is going to throw out some theories, then I guess I can throw out some theories. You know, considering that Saudi Arabia has been connected to sponsoring terrorism all over the planet. The nine of these so-called plane hijackers that allegedly, you know, crashed these planes into the World Trade Center, tried to, they say, make it to the White House, crashed in Pennsylvania. We heard the story of the passengers, you know, rising up and fighting these terrorists and whatnot. You know, I don't really know what to believe about all of that either, but it is, it has been reported, and there is no dispute that the nine of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. I've also seen credible reports that they were being funded, that they were getting funds from one of the Saudi princes and whatnot. So knowing, you know, Saudi Arabia's involvement in global terrorism and funding Sunni terrorists and whatnot, that's something I like to know. Was this guy a Sunni Muslim? But considering that he had went to Saudi Arabia and then he comes back with this woman, you know, then got married and whatnot, I'm wondering if this could have been a sleeper cell, you know, that they were living out the dream, and this marriage and even having a child was part of their cover. And they were just waiting to be activated, you know, by whoever. So that's a possibility. Again, you know, I don't have any evidence, just, you know, just the fact that he, you know, it's being reported that he had traveled to Saudi Arabia, spent some time there, and then came back with this woman. You know, to me, hell, that's just as plausible as anything else that's being put out there. But again, I'm speculating pretty much just like everybody else is speculating. Now, What really kind of pissed me off about this story is, you know, I talk a lot about gathering intelligence, and, you know, that's probably why I got 28,000 emails in my Gmail account right now. Damn, I be trying to keep up with them and whatnot, but I'm an information junkie, and, you know, I will stop following stuff, stop subscribing to stuff if I find out, you know, they not really, you know, sharing anything of any intelligence and value. But I do subscribe to a whole bunch of different organizations through their newsletters and emailings and whatnot, and just as part of my intelligence gathering operation. And so I got an email from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is, of course, a political action committee that is focused on electing Democrats to Congress. And they sent out an email yesterday calling for those. Well, they were really blaming. I'll just read it to you. Let me see. I'm way over my break. I'm like 6 minutes late. Let me take a break, a short station identification break, and then when I come back, I will read this email that came from the DCCC last night. And it just really kind of pissed me off because I'm like, you know, I know it wasn't sent to me, you know, personally or whatnot. But, you know, I hate it when people try to play on your intelligence. And the fact is, a lot of people, though, they do not engage in critical thinking and they engage in emotionalism. And they don't really see what these people were actually saying. So let me take a break. And then when I come back, I'll jump into that. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting this program every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Be right back.
What's that? Nice. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk. Black Talk.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. So this is the email that was sent to me yesterday because I subscribed to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's email list. And they said, this is, I'm going to just read it verbatim. Did you know people on the terror watch list can buy guns? Seriously. And this is unbelievable. Republicans just blocked a bill that would prevent people on the terrorist watch list from buying guns. You read that, right? We've seen more national gun tragedies than we can count. And yet Republicans still refuse to act. It's heartbreaking. We hate to say this, but these gun tragedies will continue if nothing is done about it. Keeping guns out of the hands of suspected terrorists is a darn good place to start. And then, of course, you know, they had a link to donate to DCCC, which I ain't gonna do. But, I mean, just the absurdity of that. But a lot of people, you know, they riding on emotion, and, you know, not to say that it's incorrect for people to have emotions about mass shootings where there is a big loss of life like this. But think about the words that they are using here. All right. What does suspected terrorist mean? All right. What is a suspected terrorist? What does suspect mean in terms of legalese? It means that I suspect you of doing something. I suspect you of being this, or I suspect you of being that. I'm saying that I suspect you of these things because I haven't found any proof to prove that you are these things that I'm suspecting you of being or suspecting you of doing. So what they are actually doing is calling for people to be punished who have not been found guilty, let alone even charged with a crime. Now, these people, if they are, you know, terrorists and whatnot, then you should be indicting them on terrorist charges, right? And then you get a conviction. You know, if you get an indictment, then you prosecute them. If you get a conviction, then you punish them. Anything outside of that framework, any punishment outside of that process is a violation of people's rights. It's a violation of democratic so-called principles. It's a violation, but, you know, I'm no dummy, and I'm pretty sure, you know, and here, wait a minute, Well, here's another question. Who in the hell gets to determine who gets on this list? And how can I find out if I'm on the list? Or a family member is on the list? Or a neighbor is on the list? These are secret government-kept lists. So they're acknowledging that the government, the U.S. government, keeps these lists and whatnot. And that's pretty much common knowledge anyway. You know, we've heard a long time about the no-fly list. You know, I haven't tried to fly on a plane, so I don't know if I'm on the no-fly list. You know, my daughter's not on it. She recently, you know, flew earlier this year. But I don't know if I'm on that list. Why might I be on that list? Well, because I'm an independent media producer who talks a lot about politics, who talks about a lot of geopolitical things that's going on in the world. I talk about how the United States finances terrorism abroad. You know, I talk about 21st century slavery and human trafficking and how Congress is lying when they say, you know, 150 years ago, the United States government abolished slavery. And I get on these airways and I tell people, whoever will listen, that that's a doggone lie and the United States is practicing slavery. And we need to end it by any means necessary. So am I on that list? And who gets to decide who gets put on the list? Who is there some kind of panel, you know, the Homeland Security Committee or something? You know, do they got a list of names that they going through? See what I'm getting? This sounds very tyrannical. You know, this just shows that this country ain't as free as what you think it is. It's what they try to make it out to be, that they are keeping secret lists on people. But again, let's get back to, you know, these two words, suspected terrorists. If you suspect me of something, that ain't worth a darn unless you can prove that I've done something. So what they're calling for is for people not to be able to buy guns, which would be a violation, to buy or possess guns, which would be a violation of their Second Amendment rights. Not that I rely on their pieces of paper to derive my rights. I am, as we were talking about yesterday, I am a sovereign human being. My family has been on this continent before these terrorists got here. So I have a lot of blood ties to this area of the world. And there were nations existing here before USA was created through terrorism, through mass murder and whatnot. So, you know, again, this, and a lot of people, they will be calling for this. They will be saying, calling Congress and whatnot, and saying, this is ridiculous. You got people that are suspected of terrorism, and you're not going to stop them from buying guns, and they ain't even thinking about the Bill of Rights. They ain't even thinking about constitutional rights. They ain't thinking about human rights. They have judged these people to be guilty without seeing any evidence against these people. And that really kind of just pissed me off. It didn't piss me off to the point that I was, you know, steam coming out my ears and, you know, but I was just like, you know, man, y'all just really think people are stupid. And really, you know, a lot of people are stupid. They will read that and they will agree with this nonsense. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, if you on a suspected terrorist list, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun and all this and that. How, you know, this ain't nothing new, though. The government been keeping lists on people for a very long time. Think about some people in from the past who we know have been on government lists and ended up getting assassinated. Martin Luther King Jr. Right? Malcolm X, right? Name any number of members or chapter heads of the Black Panther Party who the FBI director at that time said that they were the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States. And why did he say they were a threat? I'm talking about J. Edgar Hoover. Because they had food programs to feed poor people. And if they feed poor people, then those people might start listening to them about racism and police brutality and organizing and becoming a political force and whatnot. So they are the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States for feeding people, for demanding an end to police brutality in their community, for organizing against racism and terrorism, white terrorism. They were on a list. And many of them were assassinated. And some of them are in prison as political prisoners to this day, like Mumia Abu-Jamal. See, you can't charge somebody with, you know, feeding children. That's not a crime. Well, hell, it might be if it's a homeless child. In some of these cities, they have passed laws against feeding the homeless. So I stand corrected. But back then, you know, there were no laws against feeding homeless people or poor people or hungry children and giving them breakfast and teaching them how to read and whatnot. There were no laws against that. So what, you know, what did they do? Well, they created COINTELPRO, created these government databases and putting these people in there and then targeting them for assassination or framing them. So this country has a long, even before the Panthers, even before Malcolm X, even before Martin Luther King Jr. came to prominence, there was Marcus Garvey. You don't think Marcus Garvey was on their government list for telling black people that they need to stick together and band together and to pool their resources and, you know, telling Africans that, you know, y'all pretty sorry to have all those resources over there and all these other nations and whatnot are able to come together and act in their best interest. But, you know, something seemed to be wrong with you that you can't get your act together. You know, he was displaying some tough love there. And but you don't think that, you know, that shook them? Because he was organizing all these black people. He had a newspaper, an independent media producer, informing all these black people about racism and other kind of stuff that's going on that they need to know about. You don't think Marcus Garvey was on that list? Of course he was on that list. And they eventually forced him out of the country. So before you jump up and start talking about, you know, well, that makes sense to me. If they on the terrorist watch list and whatnot, then I don't think they should be able to buy guns. Well, who might be on that list today besides yours truly, Scotty Reed? Huh? Y'all don't think that they want to shut down Black Talk Radio Network or whatnot? Or the Black Talk Media Project? Who might be on that list today? Well, I have heard Black Lives Matter activists talk about how the FBI has been surveilling them. Think any of those prominent people, well, I shouldn't say prominent people, but highly visible activists within that movement, you don't think they're in a government watch list? They might be on that terrorist watch list. For what? For organizing against police terrorism, for shouting Black Lives Matter. Y'all don't think they on that list, huh? I do. Who else might be on that list? Might you be on that list? Who's to say? Who's to say? You know, all these people talking about boycotting Christmas and what. Now, how dare they? They're going to bring down the U.S. economy. This is terrorism. This is economic terrorism. We need to put them on the list. No due process whatsoever. Haven't charged you with a crime. You haven't been convicted by a jury of doing anything terrorist related. But here the Democrats are screaming for people on these secret government watch lists and these databases to have their rights trampled. This is punishment without a conviction of a crime, on a crime. See, people, y'all need to think, critically think. know the definition of words, understand. Well, I already told you the precedence has already been set. The precedence was set when they put many of our elder black leaders on that list. And how many of them have been assassinated? And how many of them have been put in prison on trumped up charges, bogus charges, and being tortured at this minute? So by you co-signing on to something like that, that means then that you're co-signing on to the mistreatment of people. That you don't believe in democratic principles. You don't believe in due process rights. You believe that people should be put on list and just rounded up and possibly killed. So let's not act like that's not happening either, because it is happening. I think it was 2012 when it was reported that the CEO of America, President Obama, walks around with a kill list in his pocket. Y'all remember that? Yeah, I remember that. 2012 is when we found out that President Obama's walking around with a little terrorist watch list in his pocket of people that he, I think they said, if I remember correctly, you know, Terrorist Tuesdays. Let's call it Terrorist Tuesday, where he meets with members of his cabinet to decide who they gonna take out next via drones and whatnot that's on his little terrorist kill list. Again, ain't proven none of these people to be guilty of a crime whatsoever. But you can just outright kill them. And I hate to quote white supremacists like the so-called founding fathers, many of them slavers or genocidal maniacs, land thieves. I hate to quote them, but the truth is the truth, no matter where it comes from, no matter who says it. And I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said that, you know, fear, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he said fear will cause people to sacrifice liberty and freedom for this false sense of security. Government can't protect you. Police don't stop crime. These U.S. intelligence services ain't stopped a single terrorist attack. The only terrorist attacks that they have stopped is the ones that they initiated through their little FBI informants who went and recruited homeless people and other people. And they are the ones who come up with the plan, and they just recruit others. And then, you know, they tell the FBI, okay, I got these guys to agree to commit this fictitious terrorist attack, so let's run in and arrest them, and where's my $10,000 payment? Those are the only terrorist attacks they seem to stop is the ones that they are the ones they created in the first place through their little FBI informants to set people up so that they can justify the outrageous amount of money that's spent on these programs, where they are not stopping a single act of terrorism. But I distinctly, you know, remember that. And when I read that about the terrorist watch list, first thing that came to my mind is, you know, the kill list that President Obama carries around reportedly in his pocket. That's murder. If you murder a person, I mean, if you kill a person, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the CEO of America. I don't care if you're the head of the CIA, DEA. I don't care if you're a cop on the street. If you extrajudicially kill someone, if you act as judge, jury, and executioner, you are a murderer. You have committed murder. And you are the one who should be arrested, charged, prosecuted, convicted, and punished. But here you got people at the highest levels of government acting like that process don't apply to them. They can just do whatever the hell they want to do. Let me play this report in case y'all, just to refresh y'all memory. This is from Democracy Now. Kill list exposed. Leaked Obama memo shows assassination of U.S. citizens has no geographic limit. This is the country that you live on. These are the people whose authority you live under in their jurisdiction of USA Incorporated. Let's listen to this report.
Headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Navneen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. The Obama administration's internal legal justification for assassinating U.S. citizens without charge has been revealed for the first time. According to a secret Justice Department document obtained by NBC News, the Obama administration's claims it has the legal authority to target citizens who are, quote, senior operational leaders of al-Qaeda or an associated force, even if there is no intelligence indicating they are engaged in an active plot to attack the U.S. In September 2011, a U.S. drone strike in Yemen killed two American citizens, Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan. The following month, another U.S. drone strike killed al-Awlaki's 16-year-old son, Abdurrahman al-Awlaki, who was born in Denver.
The document obtained by NBC News is described as a white memo that was provided to members of the Senate Intelligence and Judiciary Committees as a summary of a classified memo prepared by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. Last month, a federal judge denied a request by the American Civil Liberties Union and the New York Times for the Justice Department to disclose its legal justification for the targeted killing of Americans. The Obama administration's secrecy around the drone program is expected to be a top issue with this week's confirmation hearing of White House counterterrorism advisor John Brennan to be director of the CIA. Brennan has been dubbed by critics to be Obama's assassination czar. Joining us now is Jamil Jaffer, deputy legal director of the ACLU and director of the ACLU's Center for Democracy. You've looked at the white memo. This is something you've been asking for quite some time, Jamil. Talk about its significance. Go through it with us point by point.
Well, it's a very significant document, and it's a remarkable document, and it's something that everybody really ought to read in the same way that everybody ought to read the torture memos from the last administration. It sets out or professes to set out the power that the government has to carry out the targeted killing of American citizens who are located far away from any battlefield, even when they have not been charged with a crime, even when they do not present any imminent threat in any ordinary meaning of that word. So it's a pretty sweeping power that's been set out, and the memo purports to provide a legal justification for that power and explain why the limits on that power can't be enforced in any court.
The confidential Justice Department white paper that you're talking about, Jamil Jaffer, introduces a more expansive definition of self-defense or imminent attack than any articulated by the U.S. government before. It reads, quote, the condition that an operational leader present an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States does not require the United States to have clear evidence that a specific attack on U.S. persons and interests will take place in the immediate future. Can you talk about the significance of that and how exactly imminent is defined in this document?
Sure.
Or not defined?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you have to start with the acknowledgement that there are circumstances in which the government has the authority and maybe even the responsibility to use lethal force. Even if you think about it domestically, somebody's running down the street, waving a gun around, threatening civilians. The government doesn't have to go to a judge beforehand to seek a warrant to carry out that use of lethal force. But that's a situation in which the threat is imminent in the ordinary meaning of the term. There's not time to go to a judge. There's not time for deliberation. But the kind of imminence that the government is defining here, or the way that the government has defined the term here, is much, much broader. They're talking about situations in which the person presents no immediate threat. There's no known plot. These people are located far away from any actual battlefield. So you're not talking about a situation in which there are battlefield exigencies that the government has to worry about. You're really talking about something that looks a lot more like a law enforcement context. And in that context, the traditional rule is the government has the authority to use lethal force only in very narrow circumstances. And this memo really redefines those circumstances entirely.
Let's turn to Attorney General Eric Holder, a comment he made last March when he outlined what the White House billed as the legal rationale for its claimed right to kill U.S. citizens who belong to al-Qaeda or associated forces.
It is an unfortunate but undeniable fact that some of the threats that we face come from a small number of United States citizens who have decided to commit violent attacks against their own country from abroad. based on generations-old legal principles and Supreme Court decisions handed down during World War II, as well as during this current conflict, it's clear that United States citizenship alone does not make such individuals immune from being targeted.
Jamil Jaffer, respond to Attorney General Eric Holder.
Well, it's not a question of immunity. This is kind of a straw man. Nobody is arguing that Americans are entirely immune from the government's use of lethal force. The question is, under what circumstances can the government use lethal force? And again, for very good reason, those circumstances have traditionally been defined very narrowly. Now what the government is doing is creating an extremely broad category of people who can be targeted without judicial review before the fact, without judicial assessment of the evidence after the fact. It's a very dangerous thing that the government is doing, and I think that at some level, I think the people who have written this memo and the people who are exercising this authority in the Obama administration must be convinced of their own trustworthiness. But even if you accept that the people who are now in office are trustworthy in this sense, this power is going to be available to the next administration and the one after that, and it's going to be available in every future conflict, not just the conflict against Al-Qaeda. And according to the administration, the power is available all over the world, not just on geographically cabined battlefields. So it really is a sweeping proposition.
And we'll stop it there. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. That was a report from several years ago from Democracy Now! And I feel like it's relevant to what we're talking about right now in pertaining to who gets put on these lists, who decides who gets put on these lists, what is the criteria for putting somebody on the list, because one of the men that they mentioned was actually from the area that I live in. What was his name? Shamir Khan, something like that. He had a website. I can't remember the name of the website. He actually went to the same college that I went to. Not at the same time, though. He much, much younger than me, or was before he was assassinated. But he lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. He attended Central Piedmont Community College, where I attended school. He had a website. I think the website was called Inspire. And on the website, he talked about a lot of the stuff that the United States is doing abroad and terrorizing people abroad. So when they found out, I think it was Fox News or some news organization, that this guy lived in Charlotte and whatnot, they start, you know, calling him, harassing his parents and whatnot. So he left the United States, went to Yemen. That's where his parents was from, but he was a U.S. citizen. And next thing you know, he's dead from American drones, just killed. Now, if he was involved in supporting terrorism through that website, providing material support for terrorism and whatnot, if he was connected, if you could prove that he was connected to Al-Qaeda or any other CIA made up organization out there committing terrorism and whatnot, then why didn't you charge him with a crime like, you know, providing material support? Apparently you didn't have any evidence to get an indictment, to start a prosecution, put on a trial, put it before a jury of his peers there in Charlotte. And if they convicted him, sentence him to prison. Evidently, they did not have any evidence whatsoever. But then when he leaves the country, you assassinate him? I got a problem with that. I got a problem with it. And you should have a problem with it too, because it could be you, especially if you are a person who is an activist, who engages, you know, the public on political and social issues. Any one of you could be put on a list. Again, as I stated earlier, Black Lives Matter has been through the color of change. I remember Alicia Garza had issued a petition telling people to sign a petition to tell the FBI to stop spying on them, stop following them around, stop, you know, monitoring them on Facebook and whatnot, like they a bunch of terrorists or something. And I'm willing to bet you that some of them probably are on this so-called quote-unquote terrorist watch list. But guess who's not on that terrorist watch list? Well, any number of people who belong to the Ku Klux Klan. There's a number of different organizations, neo-Nazi white supremacist organization. I bet you they ain't on that terrorist watch list. They're not even designated as a terrorist organization, even though they are the oldest terrorist organization that is in the United States, in U.S. history, who have committed countless acts of violence, including the shooting of those Minneapolis protesters. So again, I am not one to just follow, you know, follow behind the crowd or the herd or whatnot. I am not moved by fear. It's very unfortunate that people are dying in these mass shootings and whatnot, but I do not see punishing people who haven't been found guilty of anything. I don't see that as being constructive, and I don't see that as being based on justice. It's not justice. It's anti-justice. And not that I support the Republican Party, because I believe in this political system that we have in the United States, that they are just two sides of the same coin. I don't see any Republicans standing up or trying to impeach President Obama for killing U.S. citizens extrajudicially without, you know, even charging them with a crime or anything. No, because they are for that, because it's non-white people being killed. Now, if it was white people that was being targeted, if you had, you know, the Grand Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan getting taken out by drones and whatnot, then the majority of white people be like, oh, that's not justice. What about the legal process? You know, you haven't proven that he's done anything. You haven't proven that he was going to go up in that church and kill those people and burn down black churches and this and that. But because it is mainly, again, I don't know, because I haven't seen this secret list that this government is keeping on who's on this terrorist suspected, let me correct my language, suspected terrorist watch list, meaning they ain't been proven to be connected to terrorism or planning any acts of terrorism or connected to any kind of terrorist organizations or whatnot. So again, you know, this is a matter of justice and injustice, and this government has been engaged in injustice since its conception back in 1775, and that's the truth. Am I on that list? Because I say that this corporation, USA Inc., needs to be dissolved, and we need to start from scratch. We need to throw all those bums out and start over. Because they are not acting in the interest of the people who live here, from the people who they are taking tax dollars from, and you're preying upon us, still practicing slavery through the 13th Amendment. Yes, I think this corporation needs to be dissolved, and we need to start over and create a new republic. Might I be on that list just for uttering those words? Well, don't I? Hey, don't I got First Amendment speech rights? Can I make suggestions and whatnot? But, you know, again, I am a non-white person, so we know, you know, that most of these so-called laws have a disparate impact on non-white people. Very rarely are white people. I mean, come on. Now, I want to change gears here for a minute. Did I take my station identification break? Let me take another quick break, and then when we come back, the president isn't even doing all he can do. The CEO of America, there, he doesn't need Congress. And this goes back to what I said at the beginning of this program, that this gun control issue is a hot button issue that they use to get you to donate money to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee to elect Democrats. You know, this gun control issue, they don't plan to do nothing. They just use these tragedies just to get you angry, to get you emotional, so that you will send them some money to elect Democrats who say that they're going to pass gun control, even though, you know, they had an opportunity to do that in 2008, 2009, 2010, and they didn't do it. So what makes you think they're going to do it now? But again, they are not even the president, who is the head of the Democratic Party. Since he's a Democrat, he's the CEO of America. He ain't even doing the least that he could do to address these issues. And they don't plan to do it, because then next election cycle, you know, they can't, you know, use this talking point. It's the same as with Republicans and abortion. They don't plan to ban abortion. They know that's settled law already. But, you know, they'll make a bunch, their operatives will make a bunch of fake videos about Planned Parenthood, selling baby parts and whatnot, and get people emotional, get people to commit acts of terrorism, you know, and then not even call that terrorism. These are just hot button emotional issues that are used in a political partisan fashion. And people need to wake up to these very facts. Let me take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. This network is managed by the North Carolina-based nonprofit new media company, Black Talk Media Project. We are a listener-funded radio, so if you can, if you're able, please make a donation to keep our media operations going. We'll be back on the other side.
What is racial showcasing? That means taking huge numbers of black people and putting them out front. There's going to be more of this all over the planet. Many, many millions of black people that you will see who will be rolling in money. They'll be able to showcase the places where they live. They'll be able to showcase their knowledge and expertise. So you have television now, you have all of the mediums for doing this, for showcasing huge numbers of black people. I will say it will eventually run into the millions, so many that you won't be able to count them. Now, what is this for? This is for any black person that starts talking about racism in the future is going to be laughed at, because they're going to be able to showcase so many black people who are what you call quote unquote successful that it will seem that racism has been put out of business. But white supremacy is a world business, and like any other business, it works on profits and losses, which means percentages. You go into business, you expect a certain amount of loss. You're in the grocery business, well, you might have a load of asparagus that is full. But overall, you will make more profits than you have losses if you're going to stay in the business. Now, so the white supremacists know that the cost of doing the business of white supremacy is going up. They can no longer get away with Joe Lewis and Lena Horne like they did years ago. They have to have many, many, many more black people who are going to be showcased. I made up this term just to explain it. You have to make up terms, because they won't make them up for you. So now that's the first phase, or one of the first elements in the maximum confusion. And so that black people won't be able to say, they'll say, well, you know, it must be something wrong with me that I'm down and out and don't have a biscuit to eat, because there are so many millions of black people who have so much, so it can't be a race. But see, for the 4 or 5 million black people who will be showcased, there will be hundreds of millions worldwide who won't have a biscuit. That's the way the business operates in the future, and will be. That's the way it seems to be going, according to what? The evidence, according to the logic.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast from behind the enemy lines, known as USA Inc. The UPI like to direct your attention to an article that's posted on UPI, and also usually whenever I refer to any kind of news articles or anything like that, I link to them in the program page for whatever day I'm broadcasting or whatnot. So I'm on the I'm just went through the link to UPI, United Press. I think that's what it stands for. I'm not sure. Anyway, this is an article that was published about a week ago or so. It says that nearly 140 members of Congress on Monday asked President Barack Obama to close a controversial legal loophole in federal gun laws that allows some people to buy guns without first submitting to a background check. Representative Mike Thompson, who is the chair of the House Gun Violence Prevention Task Force, drafted one letter and gathered the signatures of 114 other lawmakers. The California Democrats sent the letter asking Obama to take action to reduce violence, since he says Republicans in the House won't. Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat out of Connecticut, also drafted a different but similar letter. I lost my place. Give me just a moment. On Monday, calling on President Obama to take executive action to curb gun violence. The loophole both letters refer to is a stipulation in federal law that mandates those in the business, quote unquote, of selling firearms be licensed, which means they must conduct background checks on all persons they sell weapons to. Those not in the business, though, are not required to perform any security checks. So that means, like, me selling a .22 rifle to my cousin, which I actually did. He wanted one of my rifles and whatnot to go hunt squirrels with or whatever. And he, you know, offered me X amount of dollars. He was like, "Let me buy you a .22, man. You don't never use it and whatnot." And I like, "All right, man. I don't want to sell it, but I'll go ahead and sell it to you." So, you know, I didn't have to do no background check on my cousin, who I've known all my life, who lives just two doors down from me. All right. Living on family property. So that's what they're talking about. But if I was going out, first of all, I would have to have a dealer's license in order to buy a whole bunch of guns, you know. And then I'm going to put myself into business, you know, to sell guns from my house. You know, I live in an unincorporated area, meaning that I don't live under any city jurisdictions. I don't live I do live under state laws or whatnot and county regulations, but it's very easy to start a business where I live. This particular area is unincorporated and whatnot. And, you know, I don't even need licenses in a lot of cases, depending upon what kind of business you're running, because we ain't under nobody's jurisdiction except for the state or maybe the county. And they really don't have a bunch of rules and regulations pertaining to certain stuff. But anyway, if I wanted to do that and sell these guns over the internet, you know, then I should be required to have a gun dealer's license, and I should be required to do a background check on everybody, you know. And then how would you do that over the internet? Because I did read in this article that people do sell guns like that over the internet. So you are not, you know, I don't think that you're doing background checks. I've never bought a gun over the internet. I always go to the brick and mortar store, to the gun store, to buy guns. I don't go to these gun shows and whatnot, you know. I don't go to those. Most of the guns that I have been passed down in our family anyway. So, you know, I do believe in common sense things and closing loopholes like that. I do think that people should submit themselves to background checks and whatnot. I do think that they should, even though if they do have a criminal conviction, if they serve their time, they should have all their rights restored to them, their Second Amendment rights, because to not restore their rights is to continue a punishment for them. When you said that, hey, I was selling drugs, you gave me 10 years, I did my 10 years, I should have my right to vote back, I should have my Second Amendment rights restored, and all of that. But I do believe, though, you know, that there are some common sense things that we can do to keep the guns out of the hands of let's say, at-risk individuals, at-risk who are people who are predisposed to violence. But then, you know, that would be, hell, millions of people in this country. But, yeah. What my point is that as you hear President Obama, CEO of America, pontificate on the news from his bully pulpit and call on Congress and call out the Republicans and say, you know, we need gun legislation. We need more gun legislation to restrict all of this gun violence. Number one, gun regulations, the strictest gun regulations that I know on the planet are in Europe. But guess what else they got in Europe? They got a thriving underground gun market. And we see that those people, whoever was behind those attacks in Paris, gun control didn't stop those attacks, did they? Gun control didn't stop that white supremacist in that one country that shot up all them kids. I think that was Denmark. Gun control in that country didn't stop that attack, did it? People talk about Chicago, some of the strictest gun legislation on the planet. Baltimore, Maryland too. Maryland as a state. But yeah, people keep getting hold of guns, don't they? People keep getting shot, don't they? And when I talk about places like Baltimore and Chicago, that ain't people just killing people because they psychopathic maniacs. Most of that has to do with the drug war. That has to do with the illegal drug market that was created on the street by drug war policy. By prohibiting people from having something that they ought to be able to have if they're adults and whatnot. You shouldn't be able to dictate to me what I can and cannot put in my body or whatnot, long as I'm not harming another individual. But the illegal drug street market is the root cause of all this violence. You don't take my word for it. Go to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition's website, LEAP. .cc, and listen to all them former cops, judges, and lawyers and whatnot talk about how all of this violence that we see in places in Chicago in the inner city is rooted to the illegal drug market created by drug prohibition. And I'm not even going to go down the road of the DEA, the CIA, and the credible evidence out there showing that they funnel drugs into this country or work with drug cartels and to allow them to bring drugs into this country. So, but I do believe there are common sense things that could be done, and President Obama ain't doing them. Why, you might ask? Anybody ask him? Has he talked about it? Why isn't he using the power of the executive branch? Hell, he using some power that he made up to just kill people. Well, he wasn't the first one to do it. Bush was the first one to do it. But you killing people without charging them with any kind of crimes whatsoever, and then you catch them overseas and you murder them. You murder them with your drone strikes and whatnot. And then don't even care about how many other civilians that you kill in the process, and just chalk it up to, oh, collateral damage. They shouldn't have just went to the market that day. They shouldn't have been in the vicinity of that terrorist. But you can do that, but you won't use your legal authority to close some of these gun law loopholes and federal gun laws. That's because they have no interest. He has no interest. The Democrats have no interest in closing these legal loopholes. They just feeding you a bunch of garbage to get you emotional, to give you a hot button issue so you'll donate money to elect more Democrats, and so you'll go out and vote for Democrats and say, hey, you know, hell, the Republicans, you know, they want to keep guns on the street and all this and that. Look, the president ain't even doing all he can do. And some of this stuff is common sense stuff. It says, under current law, only licensed gun dealers are required to perform background checks for all gun sales, and only those individuals deemed to be engaged in the business of dealing in guns are required to obtain a license from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the House letter states. However, the regulatory definition of engaged in the business is exceptionally vague. As a result, individuals are able to sell guns at a high volume at gun shows. And we've heard about the gun show loopholes over the internet or elsewhere without ever having becoming licensed, and in turn without being compelled to conduct a simple background check before completing a sale. So again, this is common sense stuff that I can get behind. I can get behind this. I would support that. I mean, you know, I ain't never bought a gun in going to, like I said, I don't go to these gun shows and stuff like that. But I would support that. I think if you are selling guns as a business, you should be licensed just like everybody else is licensed. I have to be licensed as a nonprofit to operate Black Talk Media Project. You should be licensed to sell guns. And you should be required to perform background checks. That's common sense stuff that I think reasonable people should be able to come together behind. But apparently, President Obama ain't being reasonable. Because he don't need Congress. He don't need Republican votes. He don't even need Democratic votes to close these loopholes. He can do it on his own through the power of the executive branch of the United States government incorporated. He can do it. Why isn't he doing it? Again, I hate to keep belaboring the point that because they never plan to do anything. They got to have a hot button issue to make you emotional so that you will donate money to them and then you will vote for them. Because you will forget the fact that, you know, Democrats control all both branches. They control, you know, Congress, which is the Senate and the House, and they control the executive branch. And they could have passed legislation, but they didn't. But now here we are upon another election season, and you will have here Hillary Clinton and other Democrats and stuff saying we will do these things. Well, why didn't you freaking do them back then when you was a senator, Hillary Clinton? Why wasn't you pushing for this back then? Why wasn't you introducing bills to close the loopholes back then? Why didn't y'all do it? Again, I'm going to keep telling you, because it's a red herring. They don't care about this kind of stuff. And if President Obama closed these loopholes, then, you know, then what talking point are they going to use to play on your emotions every time somebody get killed in this country? So you got the House, you got the Senate calling on the president to close these loopholes. And there is no reason that I can see, no logical reason why he shouldn't. So if you come to me talking about we need to elect Democrats and cause the Republicans won't do that, first of all, I'm pro Second Amendment. But I am, you know, I have common sense and I know that it is a problem. And I wouldn't have a problem with him closing those loopholes. But don't tell me I need to elect Democrats to close the loophole because they could have done it and they didn't do it and they can do it now. And they know they can do it now, and they're calling on the president to do it without them having to do anything. So, again, man, we have to think about these issues in a constructive manner. We can't be emotional and let emotion. We have to do research. We have to ask the right questions. Thompson, Mike Thompson, again, getting back to Representative Mike Thompson, chair of the House Gun Violence Prevention Task Force, he said that through executive action, President Obama can help keep guns from criminals, domestic abusers, and the dangerously mental ill. Now, I don't know what details he are talking about, but I do think that if you commit an act of domestic violence, I do think that perhaps if a judge grants a domestic violence protective order and you've been given due process and you get to go in there in court and present your side of the story or whatnot, but if it's determined that you have abused your domestic partner, your wife, your husband, or whatever, and you own guns, I think that your guns should be confiscated. They should be confiscated until that issue is resolved. Y'all get a divorce, y'all go to counseling or whatever, and you know you are not currently engaged in that kind of violent behavior. I would agree with something like that. But then guess what, though, as I was thinking about that, that would mean then that up to 40-50% of cops wouldn't be able to own personal firearms, because according to womenandpolicing.org, you know, cops commit domestic violence against their partners at 4 times the average national rate. So that's opening up, but that's a whole nother can of worms. I bet you them police unions don't want to see that happen, do they? Because then a lot of them wouldn't be, they, you know, then the question would be raised, well, damn, if you ain't fit to own a personal firearm, you damn sure shouldn't be given a gun and a badge by the state. And perhaps that's why we see all of this police killing people, police gun violence against citizens. Because, hell, they're unstable people. Hell, they don't even care about their wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, and husbands. Hell, they beating the hell out of them. So it's no far leap to then see that, you know, they ain't got a problem with gunning down people in the street or beating them up. See, but they don't want to go down that rabbit hole. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole. So, again, the president can do things to address gun violence. He hasn't up to this point. And it does lend credence to arguments that Democrats are just playing politics with this tragedy to garner votes from the anti-gun crowd. We take my last station identification break, kick some message music, and then when I come back, I want to talk about a related issue related to terrorism and gun violence. As y'all know, up to, I think, what, 4 or 5 racist white men shot 5 people at the Black Lives Matter protest and demonstration in Minneapolis against the police occupying the 4th precinct. And I understand from some news that I was reading earlier today that they have now dismantled and forced those protesters off the property, which is really their property, but forced them off the property where this police precinct is. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to focus on that, but I did want to mention that. But these terrorists, these white terrorists, they wasn't on no list. They wasn't on no list. And if they really monitoring the internet through these secret surveillance programs and whatnot, these dudes posted video of themselves in masks, waving guns around, talking about they was going to that demonstration, using racial slurs and whatnot. And they were not stopped. They were not prevented. Police did nothing. And I talked about it the other day. But more interestingly, these people ain't even been charged with terrorism. All right? They have undercharged these people. So don't talk to me about some terrorism that's being committed by Muslims and this and that. I ain't trying to hear that. My community, the community that I care about, not my community that I physically live in, we're not under assault like that by police. We're not being stopped and frisked. We're not just being pulled over, you know. Now, if I go to Charlotte or if I go to Gastonia, you know, these cities and whatnot, then I might get targeted. But I'm not living under the police terrorism like so many of our family members are in this country. That's the terrorism I'm concerned about. State-sanctioned and sponsored terrorism. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Stay tuned. I will be back on the other side.
This is Von Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists. We think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is fixed on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says it's supposed to be is, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. That there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to, has to bring an end to.
We also recognize that individuals do not create rebellions. Conditions do. Until they begin to address themselves to those conditions, rebellions will continue and they will escalate. Sometimes the question has been raised about why black men fight and have fought for this country. It is the black man's implacable will to be free that makes him fight for this country. And it is that same will that will make him fight this country, fight. I want to address myself now to problems as they exist in the black community across America. And America cannot be considered as a stable and just society. But no stable and just society can mount a successful offensive against black youth who break a window and at the same time plead that it is powerless to protect black youth who are being murdered because they seek to make American democracy a reality. Time a black church is bombed or burnt, that is violence in our streets. Each time a black body is found in the swamps of Mississippi and Alabama, that is violence in our land. Each time black right workers cannot be protected by the government, that is anarchy. Each time a police officer shoots and kills a black teenager, that is urban crime. You see, we recognize America for what it is. The Fourth Reich. And we tell America to be on notice because if you are gonna play Nazis, black folks ain't gonna play Jews.
This is Monroe, North Carolina. The town where local NAACP president Robert Williams created headlines when he said, "Sometimes violence must be met with violence." Many asked why.
You know, we do whatever we do to survive.
Drop it!
Some of the people who had thought that
it would be better to settle these cases violently. I had been able to persuade them that we should use the courts and go into the courts. So this thing had boomeranged, and I was being held responsible for having brought these cases to court. There was a trial where a Negro maid had been kicked down a flight of stairs by a white man, and that this man hadn't even bothered to come to his own trial, and that he had also been acquitted. And there was a demonstration as a result of this in the courtroom by the Negro women of the community. And they had approached me and had said, well, you said that you would see that these people would be punished because through the organization we would have competent counsel. And that if it hadn't been for you, that these people would have been punished. And they wanted to know what I would recommend that they do from then on. And so I recommended that they meet violence with violence, that Negroes must be prepared to repulse attack, that they must be willing to fight, that they must be willing to die and to kill if necessary, that there was no law, there was no 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution of equal protection in the South, and that therefore they didn't have any deterrent, so they would have to create the deterrent force themselves by meeting violence with violence.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back. You're tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I want to direct you to this article that I found today on TeleServeTV.net. TeleServeTV.net. It is linked up for you for those that's on Black Talk Radio Network viewing the program page right now. Black Lives Matter protesters in Minneapolis say the attackers should be charged with terrorism. The headline is, "No Terror Charges in White Supremacist Attack on Black Protesters." But yet, you know, a bunch of white people get killed, and you got the president and others trying to say this was an act of terrorism. You know, well, we don't know if it's terrorism or workplace violence, but we're trying to make the connection to terrorism and whatnot. I mean, terrorism has very specific definition. Let me pull it up for you. It is usually where violence and not all, it doesn't even require violence, but even intimidation. But the use of violence and intimidation in pursuit of political aims. White supremacy is a political aim. White supremacy is a political construct. All right. It was governments who came up with racial classifications and then started practicing racism against those in the wrong classification. They determined was the wrong classification. All right. So any racism and whatnot, you know, when we're talking about institutional racism, when we're talking about the disproportionate way that well, I wouldn't even put it on race, because, again, a lot of people want to gloss over the fact that, according to some media reports, over 400 unarmed white people have been killed by police. Police are a arm of who? Of the government. What is the government? A political entity that makes laws, pass laws and whatnot. And then through the police, they use the fear of violence and intimidation to get you to adhere to these laws. Doesn't matter if the laws are unjust, like the drug laws or and other laws like that, other so-called victimless crime. Doesn't matter. So any kind of police violence and whatnot, I view that as an act of terrorism, unless they are really, really forced to defend themselves or defend the lives of others. I'm not some crazy person that's going to say that cases like that does not arise. But we got hundreds, if not over, over 1,000, because we don't got the full number. All police departments are not required to report how much violence they are using, how many people they are killing, shooting, beating. They're not required to keep those kind of statistics, but I view them as terrorists because they are using violence and intimidation to force us to adhere or bow to the will of politicians, what would we call them, corporate officers of USA Inc. Now, because this protest and demonstration was against police terrorism, you had these white men, and I've heard reports, I haven't seen anything to confirm it, but I've heard reports that, you know, some of these people knew the police and were had police help in carrying out this, whether it was police just looking the other way and whatnot. But besides all of that, let's not get into those conspiracy theories until we can prove we can have more than one source to then say, yeah, this looks like it's true, because we got different sources verifying the same thing or saying the same thing. All right, let's use journalistic standards. All right. But this was a political demonstration against domestic terrorism. And these white men in the video that they made was in support of the police, and if not in support of the police, against the black people, and seeking to intimidate them not to participate in their First Amendment rights, their human rights to demonstrate, to protest, to peacefully get together on public property and make their grievances known. All right, so these people were shot. They shot five or more people. I think they shot five people. So you got four militant. This is what Teleserve is called now. I think this is a website based in Venezuela. Shout out to Venezuela. I appreciate what y'all did through the UPR process and telling the United States government to end slavery and to repeal the 13th Amendment that does not end slavery. It just makes it legal as punishment for crime. So I shout out to Venezuela. But anyway, this is what they wrote. They said four militant white supremacists were charged Monday for their connection to a domestic terror act targeting Black Lives Matter protesters who were demanding accountability for racist police brutality in Minneapolis last week. Minnesota prosecutors filed felony charges against the four white supremacists, including Alan Scarsella. Man, I wonder if he's related to that former NYPD police detective. What was his name? Anthony Scarsella, that detective. I know Scarsella because that's not a lot of people got that last name, who set up all those people and put them in prison where he was planting drugs and other stuff on them. Anyway, Scarsella, they have been charged with one count. Check this out. They undercharged these people. They have been charged with one count, a second degree rioting for shooting at five protesters, as well as five counts of second degree assault. Give me a freaking break. They shot people, and you're calling that second degree assault? How about attempted murder? Huh? Because if you shoot somebody, you gotta know that there's a high probability that they gonna die. They get to shoot five people, and it's called assault. It's not called attempted murder. But again, we're talking about white males, right? The original terrorists of this land. That's what we're talking about, right? But, you know, they ain't even charging with attempted murder, but they haven't even charged them under any terrorism laws that they have. This is terrorism. This was clearly an act of terrorism, to stop these people or to intimidate these people for standing up for their rights to be free of police terrorism, for their rights to demand police accountability, for their rights to demand police transparency and releasing the video of the shooting of Jamar Clark. Why haven't they released that video? If it's like how they said it went down, then they could stop all of this and we'll be like, well, he shouldn't have, you know, tried to grab that cop's gun or whatnot and tried to kill them cops, and maybe he would be alive today. He should have just gave up. But You know, when you don't release the video, then we're left to only judge these cases based off of your history, and you have a history of killing unarmed citizens in this country. It's not a matter of Mr. Clark being involved in an act of domestic violence, which we are against. It's not, you know, but he should not have been murdered, is what people are saying. Nobody's trying to sweep his act of alleged domestic violence against his girlfriend. Nobody's trying to sweep that under the rug. But should he have been murdered for it? Should he have been judged and executed by cops? See, that we're left to speculate is on that's what occurred. Several witnesses said that he was handcuffed when he was shot. I think he was shot in the back of the head. So, you know, what you're saying doesn't quite jive with eyewitness testimony as well as a forensic testimony. If, in fact, he was shot in the back of the head, that don't jive. That don't make sense. So that's why them people out there. But these white terrorists, these white male terrorists, they can't stand black people standing up and exercising their rights as so-called citizens of USA, Inc. So they want to go and commit an act of terrorism against these people by shooting them. And this system that is based on the myth of racism and white supremacy, I should say white supremacy, but it is racism. It's nothing mythical about racism. But we're seeing here racism involved in the prosecution of these white men. Number one, they should be charged under terrorism laws. This was an act of terrorism against a political demonstration to intimidate these people, to kill these people. I don't shoot people in that. Well, I've never shot anyone, but I would not shoot someone that I was not seeking to kill. I don't, you know, most people don't shoot to wound people or whatnot if they feel their life is in danger or whatnot. Or when they're trying to assassinate somebody. I think this was an attempted assassination. But, you know, there's an absence of terrorism charges and there's the absence of attempted murder, the most serious charge that they could be charged with. We're happy nobody died, but they could have been killed. They could have been. We're happy they weren't murdered, but this was attempted murder. But apparently, the prosecutors in Minnesota do not agree that Black Lives Matter, so they are not going to charge these white terrorists with attempted murder of black people. And then some of the victims could have been white, because there was a lot of white people out there in support of Black Lives Matter as well. So we don't, I don't know what, I haven't seen, you know, the names or the pictures of all the victims, but this was an act of terrorism. In Minnesota, prosecutors should be charging these. Hell, not even Minnesota. Where is the U.S. attorney on this? Huh? Over the district or whatever district is in that regional area covering that part of Minnesota, Minneapolis. Where's the U.S.? Are they working on this? Are they investigating this? Huh? As an act of terrorism, where is the FBI? I think the FBI said it wasn't an act of terrorism. Then what the heck is an act of terrorism then? If this ain't one. See what I'm saying? This is why this corporation needs to be dissolved and we need to start over with a brand new republic. We can have new elections locally, you know, to elect new representatives and all that. We, you know, we can use the framework of how it was set up the first time, but, you know, it's utterly corrupt now. It is no, it's no longer even a republic. It's a corporation. They incorporated in 1871. And we need to dissolve that corporation. And we need to start over and implement a system based on justice. Because we are getting no justice from these people, from this system that does not treat everybody equally under the law. 14th Amendment don't mean nothing. All they care about is enforcing the 13th Amendment. And what is that? To put your behind in slavery if you violate any of the unjust laws that they want to dictate to you, these corporate officers down there in Washington, D.C. Anyway, this kind of just makes me angry. Please read the rest of this article if you so choose. I have a link to it. These people put out a threatening video on social media, but somehow, you know, the FBI Homeland Security missed that video, didn't they? Or at least that's what, you know, we are assuming that they missed it. They could have saw it and didn't do nothing about it. Then let it happen to teach them Negroes a lesson. So anyway, listen, that's my program for today. Coming up here at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Tando Radio Show will be on air. The topic for discussion will be the Moors and secret societies. Brother Dave, also known as L.A. Dave, is the host of that program. He shares a lot of constructive information. Hope that you will tune in or keep it locked right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines of USA Inc. It's Battlefield America out there. Casualties are being created every day. You need to develop battlefield situational awareness. You need to become codified. You need to develop skills that will make it unlikely that you'll become a victim. It's no guarantees, you know, but we are just trying to do our best to survive right now. And some of us are actually engaged in fighting these evil bastards and doing everything that we can do within our power to bring about a system based on justice. But I don't want, I get sick and tired of hearing about all these casualties. And in some cases, these casualties could be preventive if people just learn and take preventive measures. But again, you know, we are engaged in a war and there are going to be casualties. That's to be expected. But, you know, you got to still do all you can do to lessen the likelihood that you will become one. Let's see. Today is only Thursday, so I will be back on air tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with another episode of Black Talk Radio News. I hope that you will tune in and bring a friend. With that said, peace and blessings to all.